SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good post-Triple Crown Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, a terrific Belmont Stakes weekend. Once we got the wayward passing storm out of the way on Friday, missed it by just that much. I did tweet that there was going to be, you know, potential for a passing shower, I think I called it, between 3 and 5. It was a little bit more than a passing shower, but overall, it did not impact. I shouldn't say that, because it definitely impacted that New York stake. We'll get to that. That's down the pecking order of things to absorb and enjoy and relish out of particularly the Saturday that was just, you know, absolutely near perfect. The day, you know, talk about near perfect. How do you not start the day and the coverage by talking about the day that Godolphin had as an organization, because the 1-2 finish for Charlie Appleby in the Justy game and Adyar winning the Derby earlier in the day, and then capping everything with Essential Qualities, I would say not retribution. That's a heavy-handed word, but certainly for those that kind of rolled their eyes when Brad Cox said, when I looked at this horse the first time, I said, this is a Belmont winner. Well, he was right. So what can you say? He was right. It was one of those, oh yeah, okay. Well, it's pretty prophetic. Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie, who ran just an exceptional race. Just exceptional. In defeat. And I thought certainly for Brad Cox, who's actually on a plane literally right now at 9 o'clock. So Brad tomorrow, because he's traveling back to Louisville. And so we'll get him early in the show tomorrow to recap his weekend. I don't think there's any stakes that he can win today. He did win that Australasia, actually won the Jersey Girl yesterday too. So he started the week, the mid part of the week, winning a couple of stakes at Prairie Meadows. He had a little Belmont Stakes success, and then capped it off yesterday with the Jersey Girl. So we'll talk to Brad tomorrow. Hoping to, I haven't reached him yet, but expect to have a chance to talk to Jimmy Bell and let him reflect on the kind of day it was for the boys in blue. The fact that the Derby winner comes back and wins the Belmont, it does put a nice cap on what has been a difficult and testing 5 weeks. Let's be honest. Call it 4 weeks, actually, in the wake of the situation out of Derby. But when you carve up the three races, and you know, racing history will have the opportunity soon enough to do that. Right now, we're still in the immediate aftermath. But long term, I think it's going to be I think well received, and it's interesting that it is interesting. And Andy Beyer is going to join us first because in the wake of Andy calling for the change of the Triple Crown last week, he was absolutely thrilled by the performances of the top pair on Saturday. He was really impressed. I mean, to the point he reached out to me to talk about it. And it is unusual that we get to Belmont and it ends up being, you know, at least, you know, from a Figs standpoint, the best performances of the Triple Crown campaign of the season. 109 Beyer for Essential Quality, 108 for Hot Rod Charlie. And yes, the, you know, when you get a pair of horses, in fact, had this comment that came out yesterday on Twitter that I responded to affirmatively about, you know, two horses pressing each other and extending each other. And I think you got that from these two. And yesterday, all indications actually that they both, you know, popped out of it very well, Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie. So for these two to be a dozen lengths clear of the Preakness winner and known agenda, it gives you, you know, gives you a pause. I mean, that is a sizable gap. And it's one of the reasons that, you know, the Fig is what it is, because, you know, granted, not everybody is going to take to the 12 furlongs, but, I mean, for these two to be, you know, what was it, 11 and change, actually, 11 and a half lengths out ahead. And Andy will talk about the figure-making part, because, of course, there was the Brooklyn earlier in the day, but, you know, nobody's going to pretend that, as well as Lone Rock ran, that, you know, that his number based on the clock was going to be what these two ran. And it kind of shows you what the racetrack was doing as the day went on. So Andy will explain that. It's actually probably a very useful comparison between early in the day. I mean, the Brooklyn went off, I think, earlier than 2 o'clock, 1:20, 1:22 post time for the Brooklyn. So there was 5 hours plus, almost 5.5 hours between races, and it shows you how the racetrack, you know, can change. And all things, you know, this is one thing, and I'm sure Rich Migliori is going to join us today, and Sterling will join us tomorrow. They can talk about this too. The fact that we had the kind of weather that we had and as much water as the racetrack took, the track played fair. I mean, I think it didn't hurt to be, you know, on or near, but that's always true at Belmont. But the track was not completely, you know, I didn't hear a lot of grousing about, you know, speed favoring and this and such. I mean, usually when you're squeegeeing that racetrack, there's potential, you know, that you end up with a bias for a day or two. But they were harrowing. I mean, even on Friday. I mean, obviously there was the extra rain, but they were harrowing, you know, early, and it was obvious on Saturday morning that the track was going to get to fast pretty quickly, and it went from muddy to good to fast in fairly short order. So we got a pretty fair racetrack all in all. You know, certainly I mentioned that New York, and we'll get back to Friday's action, you know, as part of the morning's overviews. And Firenze Fire, for instance, we're going to visit with Kelly Breen, but, you know, the track, he was probably lucky to some degree that the rain came when it did and not a little bit earlier, because Kelly was sweating a sloppy track for him, and he got a good track. But then when the rain came, it obviously shook things up to the point where you ended up with scratches, graded stakes. Trainers can scratch, and so things changed quite a bit, and it undoubtedly benefited Mean Mary. Absolutely did. From a pace scenario, and also that race, that course getting soft pretty quickly with that deluge, and very tough for horses to rally. I mean, not to take away from Mean Mary's New York win, but it was certainly aided by the conditions and the changes that the weather wrought. There's no two ways about that. But she, she followed it up. She followed up her Galarette successfully. Back to the Belmont for a minute. Luis Saez, considering that Mean Mary, piloted by Louis as well. This is a great win for him, and for Kieran McLaughlin. I joked to Kieran on Saturday evening. I said, "Well, you've won one as a trainer, you've won one as a jock agent. Now you got to breed and own one, and you'll have the superfecta of Belmont wins." Happy for Luis Saez, and it's kind of interesting that over these last 3 weeks you had Flavian Pratt, who got put up in a Derby to get his first Triple Crown win. Well, he gets a redemptive, not redemptive, but more satisfying, I suppose, the better word. More satisfying trip to the winner's circle at Baltimore. And here's Luis Saez, who, of course, was famously and dejectedly and I don't think anybody can appreciate that situation for Luis Saez. Here he is getting a classic win himself without rancor and without a steward evaluation, other than the standard waiting and watching. Saturday was so deep, and it actually, notably, it didn't really even have to commence with the stakes. And we'll talk about the terrific performance by Drain the Clock in a second. But right off the bat, you had the two-year-old. Yeah, the two-year-old winner, Wit, Ron Anderson was the first actually during the week to tip the hand that, Wit was going to be a short price and one of the major potential stories, coming out of the day, and absolutely was. Did not get a good start and came running. Good-looking two-year-old by Practical Joke, and I think I said the second winner for Practical Joke. This is Rapoli and Viola and Gainsway. This was the pricey $575,000 Keeneland yearling, and when it came to Saturday's action, after Jose Ortiz had won with Firenze Fire on Friday, Wit was the first of the three wins by Jose, replacing Irad. And that obviously became, after Thursday, became a big part of the weekend storylines. Drain the Clock, Jose replacing Irad, and you could tell when they crossed the wire how thrilled he was. And then Latruska. Latruska's win, Fausto Gutierrez. Latruska now, shouldering her way to the leader of the distaff division. How are you going to argue that? Apple Blossom and Ogden Phipps winner. So many nice stories. And let me set the stage here before Andy joins us in about 5 minutes. We'll talk about most of the good portion of Saturday's grade ones this morning. Obviously, I mentioned Brad tomorrow, but Chad Brown is going to join us in the third hour. Probably be the last visitor this morning. And two grade ones for Chad on Saturday with Seth Klarman, domestic spending, who I'm anxious to hear from Chad at what stage he thinks domestic spending is in comparison to some of his best turf routers. Domestic spending ridden by Flavian Pratt with utter confidence. It just basically, no matter what was happening up front, and what up front what was happening was that Trebuvin, you know, who had been, you know, speculated as a big part of the pace, ambling along. And gosh, there had to be a point where domestic spending was a good 8, 9, 10 lengths to make up, and Pratt just cruised him up, and boy, $5. As the summer goes on, that $5 is going to look awfully good. I think the 3-2 price will not, I don't think will come again anytime soon. So he's now won 4 straight. And of course, the dead heat at Churchill, but between the Saratoga Derby, the Hollywood Derby, and the Turf Classic, those were all, you know, harrowing and tight. Obviously, dead heat was really tight. When you're inseparable, that's a tight finish. The but he beat Smooth Like Straight by a head in the Hollywood Derby, and in the Saratoga Derby, Guffo by a head. So this was, you know, widening lengths. Chart says 2 3/4, and he was winning going away once he caught Trebuvin. So Chad won 2 in here, but domestic spending is, boy, number one with a bullet. And, you know, interestingly, I said the early part of the card was engaging right away. Soft power in that second race, first-time starter, this was tight, and soft power nailed Ranger Fox on the wire, and you got 9-2. For this Klarvich, interestingly, also a Rabat bloodstock bred, as is domestic spending. And the international spending of Seth Klarman and Chad have been very, very productive. This, by the way, I happened to have caught the... I was on my way over. I missed the first 2 races live, but I was on the way over, and Andy made a great point about soft power and those purchases at Newmarket by Klarman and Chad, and 9-2, again, a terrific value on this one. And I think Andy cited that domestic spending was he 6-1 in his maiden win? Maybe it wasn't domestic. No, he wasn't. It was somebody else. It was another one of those purchases that Chad and Seth have made. Anyway, domestic spending, search results as well. Javier Castellano, in this case, subbing for Irad. And she also was confidently ridden, patiently handled, and cruised up and took over. Won by a measured half, but was... You could tell in the stretch that she was going to get him, and she did. So search results adds an acorn to her excellent resume. Has only the narrow defeat by Malathat in the Oaks, the only blemish. She's 4-5, and those two ticketed for further confrontation. The other grade ones, There were no shortage. Drain the clock. At some point, we'll get Nick Cassata. Thrilled for him. I tweeted that he's had success at the highest level, really, in the game, in every possible variety now as a breeder as well, a grade one winner. Horse player, jock agent, partnership manager, and in this case, breeder. Drain the clock. The McLean's Music, available to you at Hillendale. McLean's Music adds another grade one winner to his docket. This was good. Jackie's Warrior, coming out of the Dream Shake confrontation at Churchill, in this case, a new confrontation, and Drain the Clock looked like he was gonna be turned back and surged again and wins by the neck. The other grade one we'll talk about, and we'll have Lee Einsiedler join us. The win, the performance by Casa Creed, one of, honestly, one of the most emotional scenes you'll have in a racetrack. As I posted, Lee is one of the most appreciated, should be one of the most appreciated people on the racetrack, and has been for years. The generosity and kindness, and in the face of just an overwhelming tragedy last year, for him and his son Jeffrey Saturday, for Casa Creed to win the Jiper, you couldn't have a result more welcome for people deserving. And we'll talk to Lee in this hour after we talk to Andy Beyer, who joins us now. And just days ago on these very airwaves, Andy was decrying the state of the American thoroughbred, and obviously you feel like they've redeemed themselves. Andy, good morning.
I do, Steve. I texted you and asked to be on the show today because I was reading the coverage of the Belmont at various places. I just got more and more annoyed that nobody seemed to acknowledge what a tremendous race this was and what a great performance. Two horses gave it. It was just like people saw this as just business as usual, another ordinary Triple Crown race. I thought this was the best three-year-old race, in at least a decade. Always guided by my speed figures, and we worked. This was a little bit of a tricky day at Belmont, but I feel that we really nailed the number on the Belmont Stakes. It was 109 for Essential Quality, 108 for Hot Rod Charlie. I mean, that's the best running of the Belmont since Empire Maker in 2003. The best Triple Crown race since 2012. And I'm sure I'll annoy a lot of people by saying this, but both of these horses ran faster than American Pharoah or Justify did in any of their Triple Crown races. That's how good it was. And I think the reason people don't realize it or don't appreciate it is, you know, when you see a horse win off by a dozen lengths, it's easy to say, what a great performance. But when two of, it's a rarity, but when two of them step up and run huge at the same time, you know, it's not so obvious what they're doing. But the fact is that Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie were 11 lengths in front of the field, and right clustered behind them were the winner of the Preakness, the winner of the Florida Derby, the winner of the Wood Memorial, and farther back, the winner of the Santa Anita Derby, all of the major grade one stakes leading up to the Triple Crown, and they got buried by these two horses. So it was quite a show, in my opinion.
And to give everybody an idea, for those that haven't looked at the Twitter feed, I put up a snapshot. I grabbed the closest American Racing Manual, and the one I thought I was grabbing, the one from 2016, but it actually was the 2010, so it only goes up to Summer Bird in 2009. But as Andy notes, Empire Maker a 110 in 03, point given, arguably a top five Belmont performance ever, with a 114. It equals Lemon Drop Kids 109. The 2 years previous, how about Real Quiet and Victory Gallop and Real Quiet, Victory Gallop and Touch Gold 110s. And there had been the first 3 years of published buyer figures, there were three straight 111s, the likes of Go and Go, Hansel, and AP Indy. So
those were the good old days when horses could really run a mile and a half. As I was saying on a previous show, I mean, the Belmont has really become an anachronism, but maybe these horses show it's not. But I think that this race really kind of put these horses in perspective a little better. I mean, you know, Essential Quality came into the Derby, you know, obviously on an unbeaten record, won the Breeders' Cup, but the figures were just kind of okay. I mean, he didn't have a superstar aura, and then he finished fourth. But, you know, a lot of, you know, people like Randy Moss was saying on TV that, you know, I guess it was the Trackus data showed, you know, that he had traveled like 60 feet more than the winner Medina Spirit, right, which is like about a six-length disadvantage. And I always think that those ground loss stats could be kind of misleading a lot of the time. But in his case, it was probably about right. He, you know, give him an extra six lengths, and, you know, and that's the race he ran in the Belmont. But what was, you know, the real surprise was Hot Rod Charlie. You know, he had his best race of his career before this was one where he was on the lead, dueling in a fast pace in the Louisiana Derby, and just kept going. And I think the outfit decided, well, that's how he wants to run. And he ran, you know, a faster opening quarter than Secretariat did, and he was dueling with Rock Your World, who he buried by 20 lengths, and just kept on going. You know, when Essential Quality came to him, I think most trip handicappers would look at this race and say that Hot Rod Charlie, you know, ran the better race. But obviously these two horses are pretty close. I mean, they're both, you know, they're both real talents, and for once we can get excited about the 3-year-olds without overhyping them.
A couple of things, Andy, to note out of this, too, is that I thought was interesting. You know, they went fast early. They actually, there was a bit of an intermezzo mid-race,
yes,
where you had that slow middle half, but they came home fast for this trip, for this distance. For them to come home both in sub-25, I thought was pretty impressive.
Yes, it was. I mean, I just liked everything about it. And, you know, the just a word about the figures.
Yeah.
It was, you know, we spent a lot of, my partner Mark Hopkins and I spent a lot of time discussing this on Saturday afternoon, and, you know, we were debating about the figure, and the only real debate was whether it could be higher than a 109 rather than lower, and the reason for that is that the previous dirt race on the card, you know, was the Met Mile, which came up quite slow. And if you use that as the gauge for the to compare the Belmont with, the Belmont figure would have been even higher. But we looked at the data, and those horses who were in the middle of the pack, you know, like Known Agenda and Bourbonic, if you gave the, you know, gave the race a, you know, a figure up 113 or so on, you would have these not so great horses going backwards at the end, but still running their career bests. I mean, we look, you know, when we're making figures, we want to make a number that really makes sense for most of the horses in the field. So, you know, we couldn't be too generous to, you know, the likes of Bourbonic, but the 109 really, I think really caught what these horses are.
Also, Andy, juxtapose the hours earlier, you did have the mile and a half Brooklyn and the opportunity to look at what, you know, what happened there. And the Lone Rock's performance was just terrific. This is a horse that they obviously is an authentic distance specialist, a majestic warrior out of a hard spun mare that Tino Diodoro has. You know, really turned, I think, his third straight mile and a half victory. And how did the track change from,
well,
you know, basically 2 o'clock?
That race came up relatively slow in relation to the Belmont. If we had taken the Belmont, and this was our first inclination, well, boy, we got 2 mile and a half races, a real neat gauge. But if we had gauged the Belmont with a comparison with the Brooklyn, the Belmont would have been much higher. And for the reasons I just gave you, we decided, you know, it couldn't be. I mean, the track superintendent in Naira is, you know, Glenn Kozel is a man who likes to fine tune his racetracks, and he does some. He'll be the first to admit. I mean, he'll do adjustments during the course of the card, and I think that there were some changes from small changes from race to race, and you know, we took into account that possibility. So basing this number on a comparison with the Brooklyn, I think really would have thrown us off.
Interesting. And we had 2 days, really three if you fold in Thursday, you know, with the weather that I think could have made things even more difficult. But you had Firenze Fire before the rain came on a track that was drying out steadily, and certainly the track, the track started muddy in the morning for training, and it was still listed as muddy at 11:30 for first post, but it quickly became good and then became fast. And these pose issues for figure makers.
Yes, they do. But I think this. I will not. I will not blush seeing the 109 go in the record books for this Belmont.
Well, it's encouraging because, of course, you know, the missing in action for now anyway was Mandaloon, and Medina Spiritual looks like the Haskell is his target. You also, aside from the Triple Crown participants, Andy, we've got a hatful of emerging late starting 3-year-olds between Flightline, First Captain, both for West Point. Then you had that following C's performance in the allowance on Thursday. That was eye opening, and you also had Pletcher with Mahamel. There's a bunch of horses that are going to jump in here at the quarter pole. to quote Trevor Denman, we're going to have a nice second half, I think.
Yes, and Steve Asmussen unveiled one about a week ago that you know we gave a figure to in the mid 90s, but it was a tough day, and it could have been much higher. So I think you're right. We're going to see some really good horses coming along, and there are some trainers like Asmussen who are quite willing to wait and let him mature and turn him loose late. And let's say before Saturday, I would have said that a lot of them could come along and maybe be a 3-year-old champion. But after Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie, I don't think anybody's going to overhaul these two for quite some time.
Well, and you know, one thing about Hot Rod Charlie that now they're beginning to pile up. And of course, if Medina Spirit ends up being disqualified officially, and it all, you know, all the I's get crossed and dotted and crossed the T's, his resume is going to look pretty interesting, with a second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, a second in the Derby, a second in the Belmont Stakes. They're going to want to win one of these here along the way.
I would think they will be winning one sometime soon.
Andy, I really appreciate this, and we'll at some point, maybe next spring, we'll have to revisit the Change the Triple Crown cry because you seem mollified now.
Well, except that the way this turned out, the way these horses ran was to skip the Preakness,
and
that's going to be that's been the pattern, and it's going to be the pattern more and more. So, I mean, this result does not impact my belief
overall
that the schedule has to be changed. These horses got a 5-week respite, you know, before the Belmont, and nobody wants to run back in 2 days and in 2 weeks, and that belief is going to be more solidified by this year's results. So time to change the schedule, Steve.
Well, that part, Andy's going to stick with that, comes away from the third leg, where usually people kind of roll their eyes and say, ugh, another Belmont, forgettable Belmont winner. Not so fast. And Tappet, meanwhile, adds yet another stripe to his Belmont prowess with this win.
Right.
Amazing.
Tappet's you could talk all day about Tappet, because there is no way that, you know, the smartest pedigree analyst in the world could have come up with this horse as the kind of sire he was. He was. His racing record wasn't that great. I mean it was good, but for him to be have this kind of an impact on the sport, Nostradamus couldn't have come up with this horse.
Andy Beyer, a great Triple Crown. We're going to see you probably at the end of Saratoga in person, but meanwhile, thanks so much. As always, one of the highlights for me is checking in with you along the trail.
Well, thanks for letting me vent.
Andy Beyer, everybody, and a big performance. And go to the Twitter, my Twitter feed, and you'll get a kick out of seeing the list of Belmont winners. And actually, that was why I just realized there's one thing I forgot. Somebody asked me on Twitter, and I'll check with Andy off the air. Somebody asked about Easygoers Belmont, and that was the year before the figures started to be published. And I'm sure Andy's actually got a private number. In fact, he may have even written about it at some somewhere, I'm sure. So I'll find out what that was. They were curious about how that stood up. That I put up, by the way, and I could have brought this up with Andy too. When I was looking for that figure yesterday, with the 109, and trying to see where it, where it stood up in the, recent past, in Belmont figure history on the buyer scale, I didn't have my American Racing manuals, and so I did find the 114 for point given, and I thought that was the fastest, but in fact, or the most recent fastest, but the 110 from Empire Maker is a little. Was the one that was a tick faster than yesterday. We're going to turn to one of the other just incredibly satisfying and heartwarming victories among the grade ones on Saturday, and it came in the Jiper, where from a handicapping standpoint, trying to figure out what to do with Casa Creed was not easy, and cutting back to the shortest distance of his career as a as an older horse, you wondered. But Mott has had some success changing up on the distance front, and for Lee, who has basically kind of advocated Casa Creed being campaigned as a miler, it's certainly worth taking a shot here and now and in the backyard, as it were, and rewarded with a grade one win, and lifted his spirits and son Jeffrey and everybody that appreciates what Lee brings to the sport. Lee Einsiedler joins us. Lee, congratulations.
Steve, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It's good morning. Less than 48 hours later. And I'm sure there's been more. You have a famously infectious wide smile and grin, but I'm sure there's been no shortage of swings of emotion over this.
Well, Steve, it was as it was a very emotional day. It was a great day. I was crying. Jeffrey was crying. You were crying. We were all crying. It was just one of those amazing, amazing days that make horse racing the greatest game on earth.
Exactly. And, everybody is accustomed to having, ups and downs at the races. And the thrills are unparalleled when they come. The frustrations also equally. But they really don't compare to, to real life, quote unquote. And so, to have something like this, really in proximity to, the family sadness, it just was so appropriate in so many ways.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe. We're coming up this August to a year to what happened to us last August. And when I got out of bed Saturday morning, Jeffrey, who well for so many years now, he loves the game. He loves the handicap. He's really good around the track. He said to me, what do you think is going to happen today? And I said, Jeff, I'm sure we'll get our picture taken. I kind of got the feeling when I woke up this morning that your brother is smiling down on us. So the rest is history, as they say, and amazing result, amazing performance. It was last summer that we started thinking about, and I got to give a lot of credit to my partner, Mike Francesa. We started in the back of our minds thinking about maybe cutting him back He was running really good at a mile, but he just seemed at the end, Steve, maybe a little distance reduction would help him. So we finally got that opportunity in the elusive quality. And, Steve, you remember the race. He came home so fast in a paceless race that when it came to the Jiper, everybody was talking about there's no pace to set it up for him. And we looked at it and said, it won't matter. And then he worked on Tuesday, and Mike Salito, who's sitting with me now in my office, called me, and he said, listen, this horse just ripped Junior Alvarado's arms out of his sockets. He's going to run huge. And when I spoke to Junior on Friday, I said, how do you see the race? Where are you going to try and put him? Steve, he said to me something no rider has ever said to me before. He said, it won't matter how he breaks, where he is, how the race unfolds. He won't get beat. He told me that on Friday. Huh. And there you have it. He came from second to last and ran 105 buyer. And I guess he stamped himself as maybe the top grass sprinter in the country. I mean, that kind of performance, it was sensational all around.
Listening to Bill, too, Bill Mott talked afterward about, you know, about trying things like this, and you know, the elusive quality was 7, the Jiper used to be 7, now it's 6, and we were all doing, you were up on the pedestal up top after the presentation, but we were quickly looking up Del Mar's configuration for Breeders' Cup, and it's 5. And Bill turned to me and he said, how the Del Mar thing is short, right? I said, yeah, it's 5 or 5.5, and then we confirmed 5. So that seems a little tight, but it doesn't matter. I mean, this you know, he's multiple graded stake winner, grade one winner, multiple graded stake placed. He becomes, I think I heard that he's Jimmy Creed's first grade one winner.
He's Jimmy Creed's first grade one winner, and the folks from Spendthrift were there, and they were so excited. They came up and congratulated us, and they were thrilled, and it was so interesting. Watching the race on FS2, the TV commercial prior to the Jiper was Spendthrift and Jimmy Creed.
Oh, that's funny.
So if anybody was paying attention, maybe they'd bet an extra couple of bucks on my horse. But that was the TV commercial leading into the Jiper.
There's obviously tons of opportunities between now and the fall, and you'll take your shots. I mean, this is a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, but he's probably going to get a shot at stretching back out a little bit, you would think, back to the mile, and there's some win and you're ins at a mile, too, and then you'll have a happy decision to make.
You know, that's a great point. We were talking about that on Saturday, a couple hours after the race, back at the barn. I said, how cool would it be if we won the 4-star Dave and had our pick of the litter for the Breeders' Cup?
Yeah. But,
you know, I got to tell you, I'm not really thinking about that right now. I'm still smiling from Saturday, and it's only the beginning of June, and Breeders' Cup is a long way away. And I'm going to take a couple more days and just continue to enjoy this amazing, amazing victory.
Lee, take us back. I mean, we've talked about him previously at some point, but take us back to that Keeneland purchase. He was $105,000 as a yearling, and
yep.
Who picked him out?
So, you know, Kenny McPeak picked him out. Kenny's done a really good job picking out horses for me. So he picked him out, and Pat Hoppel, who you know, breaks all of my babies. And Pat said to me early on that he thought this horse was going to be, you know, really, really good. Really good. To Kenny's credit, he said to me, you buy this horse, he'll run early at Saratoga for you. He said he's probably grass, but he might be dirt. And early on, he displayed that he loved to be a racehorse. He loved to train. He loved to work. He loves to run in the afternoon, and we broke his maiden off the turf at Saratoga.
That's right.
And since that time, he's had, well, the career speaks for itself. Winning the Hall of Fame as a 3-year-old on the grass at Saratoga was a huge win for him. Steve, this winter, when we sent him to California to run in the Shoemaker, he totally washed out in the paddock. He was a wet mess on the track. and he only got beat by a length and a half. He was sixth, but a length and a half for all the marbles, and he just didn't handle it that day. And when we got him back and we brought him into the paddock at Belmont for the elusive quality, he was dry as a bone, and man, he showed us then that shorting him up was a good idea. And now we have a lot of options. I would think, Steve, off 105 buyer, we're probably more motivated to run him short, but we have to see what the opportunities are. At Saratoga, you have Detroit is 5.5. So we'd have to think about that.
Yeah.
And there's $1 million sprint at Kentucky Downs in September. That track, as you know, is a little bit different. But there's plenty of options for him because we know he can win in a mile, and maybe sprinting, he just might be, you know, as good as any horse in the country. So it's a great position to be in, no doubt about it.
It should also, you know, gotta remind people that this was one of the unusual circumstances where you had the Bill Mott exacta because chewing gum was chasing you home. Yeah,
everybody wanted to know how big of an exacta did I make? And the truth is, as you know, I like to go to the window, but on days that I'm racing, I only bet my horse to win. I don't bet any of the other races. I just can't focus on them. But needless to say, we made a great bet as they were going into the gate. He was 13-1.
Yes.
I was standing there with Bill Mott and Jeffrey and Mike Salito. I said to him, "We're 13-1. Don't they know who you are?" And you know how great Bill is. He says, "Well, apparently they don't. Apparently they don't." And he paid such a big mutual, and nobody picked him, but we went over there really, really confident. Really confident. So
it became obvious. It became obvious. You know, I'd say the 16th pole when you saw you're watching him. Your eyes are focused there. But you know, I the white saddle cloth doesn't hurt either. A focus. Plus your pink silks. The jacket helps too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I saw him rolling on the outside, I thought, oh boy, we're going to get there. And I think the last person to realize he was going to win was the race caller. I think John Embrial thought Wesley Ward was going to get home, and he just picked Casa Creed up with about 5 seconds to go. So he came flying. He came home fast. The turf course was good, and he ran a very fast race on less than firm turf. Mike Salito standing there with me. He says, on September 11th at Kentucky Downs, there's $1 million turf sprint at 6 furlong. So maybe that's a good spot. We'll see.
That's a great spot. Yeah. I tell you what's good about that is that, you know, even though it's listed as 6 furlongs, because of the configuration,
it's a little longer.
Yeah. Exactly.
More like 6.5. Yeah.
Yeah. So yep. It suits him fine. I mean, that, and you know, yep. you say $1 million race too, and this was $400,000. Lee, I mean, obviously the emotional element kind of changes the equation, but right. among your nice wins, and you've had your share, and you've steadily, you know, you've had a steady, you know, stable star for a long time now. How does this one rank up?
You know, they're all so special. They're all so great. I mean, when Timber Reserve won the Pennsylvania Derby, that was an amazing day. When Mr. Sydney won the Maker's Mark Mile, that was fabulous. But Steve, listen, given the circumstances and everything that went into this, and you know what we're dealing with, nothing we've done in racing could compare to what happened to us on Saturday. Nothing. And no matter what happens in the future, I mean, it would be a dream come true to lead one over the first Saturday in May in Kentucky. The dream race for me is the Travers. I would love nothing more than that. But no race that we might get lucky enough to win in the future will ever have the emotion that we had on Saturday. I mean, that goes without even saying, without even thinking about it. Nothing will ever compare to what happened to us on Saturday, given the circumstances of the last year. Nothing will ever come close.
Well, this was, you know, one of those moments at the racetrack where, you know, you just,
yeah,
you appreciate the, I don't know, the ledger, the who's ever keeping a ledger, wherever they are. It just, you know, because you put, and you know, you, Lee, you've also got to be gratified by the response of so many people around the industry who recognized, you know, what, you know, your generosity and so many, you know, charitable undertakings, and you know, you never say no to anybody on any topic, no. But the response was, I bet you that had to be as gratifying as the win.
I so much appreciate those words, Steve. I can tell you it was a, I guess they would say it was a real popular win. I had congratulations from all over the world. I haven't even got through half of 300 text messages yet. Bill Mott called me yesterday driving up the highway back home to Saratoga, and he said, from all the races I've won, and I've won so many and so many stakes, this was just a popular win as I've ever had. Congratulations. That was Bill Mott telling me that this was as a popular win as he's ever had. And the well wishes from all over. And, you know, I get such great congratulations from the rider community because I've been supportive of the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And every rider, New York, California, I see text messages from everybody. From Johnny, from Javi, from from everybody, and from trainers. Every trainer that you and I know has called and written me in the last 24 hours, congratulating me on the win. So that was so nice, and it was great. I mean, you know, the horses make it special, and the people that involved in racing make it special. So just amazing.
Well, and really a chapter that has got, you know, has got some further exploits to be written. He's writing his own story.
Listen, he's a 5-year-old, but he's relatively lightly raced now, and nobody's going to take care of him better than Billy Mott. And if we continue to run him short on the grass, he could have a long career. I mean, he reminded me the other day, and I think like Francesca said it, he looked like Disco Partner out there. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for Casa Creed for a while. So,
and you enjoy it. You enjoy it. You're not somebody that's necessarily going to be, you know, looking to rush him off to some stud deal. So you'll have fun. You'll have lots of fun with him. You already were having fun.
They call it fishing, not catching, and golf is a good walk ruined. I'd rather go to the track. And these days for me are the greatest days of the year. And he came out of the race great. And we'll probably lead him over if everything goes well. We'll probably lead him over there in Saratoga. You got the Troy, and if we decide to stretch him out, you got the 4-star Dave, and There are a lot of big race days ahead for Casa Creed. Again, I want to tell you, I've had a lot of nice horses, and I think I have a couple good ones coming up now. From the day we got him, he showed us that he loves to be a racehorse. He loves to be a racehorse.
Well, for those that cashed and for those that appreciate this performance that puts Lee in the winner's circle, for those of you that drink tequila, raise a glass Casamigo, and we'll look forward to the second half of the year with him, Lee. I'm so, you know how happy I am for you. So I
know you are. I greatly incredible. Appreciate the support, and thanks so much for taking a few minutes this morning
Great,
you know, Steve, life is about making great memories. This one's at the top of the list.
No doubt about it. Looking forward to a copy of the photo and to the way the rest of the season unfolds for Casa Creed. Lee Einsiedler and Junior Alvarado and Bill Mott. The grade one Jaipur, which has been a important bellwether in recent years in the division. Let's do this. We'll take a break here, and we'll come back. Hour two, Rich Migliori is going to join us. Kelly Breen also ahead. Michelle Lovell, who not only won on Friday the terrific effort by Change of Control, but she also won the stake Saturday at Churchill. So we're going to talk to Michelle and Chad Brown in hour three as well. Recapping Belmont weekend, the Triple Crown season over. We got a few days of recapping to get to. Brad Cox tomorrow, by the way. And I'm going to say Steve Asmussen tomorrow, most likely, too. And much more. Andy Serling. So, day one. I always put part one, part two, part three. It takes quite a bit. And there's so many people I'd love to talk to. Fausto Gutierrez, again, with the Latruska. Amazing. There were countless. Todd Pletcher, Todd didn't necessarily have the weekend, complete weekend that he might have wanted, but Con Lima, another eclipse filly. It's amazing. But Todd also had some of those undercard performances, that following C that he got from Spendthrift and Mahamel as well. That was a terrific effort. So, just the one stake. Who else? Who else did we not? I think we mentioned everybody. Oh, the Better Roses on Friday. That Estillo Talentoso, who I thought looked like a winner every single step. The other McLean's Music. Great weekend on that front for the young sire. And speaking of which, we got our McLean's Music that is getting back on track. Had a little weird thing that kept him off the track for a few days, but he's back going. It was a great weekend. Back after this, I haven't talked about the two-year-olds either. Wesley Ward swept those. Rich Migliori next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 384643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents